The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We are sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York, where we're not the biggest, but we're the best. Today is Friday, September 26, 2014, and our motto is, we don't try, we succeed. And today, we have a guest that I've been wanting to get on for quite a while. We have his son on. Normally every week, every other week, Bert Soren. I've been trying to get his father on, and we got him today. We got Richard Soren with us. If for any of you don't know who Richard is, he is the owner of Soren X Equipment, and this guy is more than a grip specialist. He's seen things that most of us will never see. So, Richard, with that, I welcome you to Motivation Muscle, and we are so happy to have you here.
Eric, I'm really pleased to be here visiting with you. This is a real treat. It's a good way to end a hard week of lifting and a good week of business. I'm excited.
I'm glad. Why don't you, for anybody that doesn't know of you, okay, in my audience, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, and then we're going to really get into, like you were just talking about with me off the air, we're going to really lay the base of how you came pretty much from a lifting background, something that you loved, that ended up turning into this mammoth thing you got now, which is out there for everybody. You make superior equipment. I mean, you've been all over magazines, everything with your gripping and the knowledge you're going to bring us today. I'm so excited. So, Richard, just give us a little bit of background about you for everybody.
Okay, I'd be glad to. It started very early. The passion was, I think, always there. I always admired strength. I have a picture that I've saved and cherished for years of bringing my first barbell, and it felt heavy then when I was at 5 years old to kindergarten show and tell. And I saw they asked you to bring your favorite thing, and all I could think of was my little barbell. So that was over 60 years ago I did that. And it hasn't changed. Maybe my lifting has changed. Maybe my ideas have changed, interacting with people. But the interaction of strength and the people that I've met through my gift of grip and my just pure passion for strength and seeing it happen and appreciating it has carried me all through life. As a very young person, I was a big child, but I wasn't exceptionally strong or athletic. And finding out that weights somehow magically made me better, I never really put it together, but it seemed the stronger I did get, the better I did at all other things. So there was a tie there that maybe I was unconscious of, but for sure it was there. It's carried me my entire life. Everything I have, everything I own, I could trace back to the passion of that first day I took my barbell set to kindergarten.
And, you see that with all the successful guys. I know, like, with what we're doing here, the passion I have for this and the feedback I'm getting right now from people, they're telling me, you've changed my life. I remember, Brooks Kubik is now a regular on the show, Richard, and, his book, Dinosaur Training, in the early 90s, and I was very young then when that came out. I mean, that really, to me, kind of set me up in a lot of ways for, what I'm doing now with stone lifting, going to Iceland to lift the Husafell stone, all those things. That book kind of set everybody back that I know of. I mean, in my era, kind of back on your heels because, I've seen stuff, but, you never really seen barrel lifting, walking with large objects, you know, things of that nature, and it kind of stirred up a whole new thing in me. Now, obviously, you've been around for a while, and you've seen things come and go. What do you think was the biggest influence you as a young man? Do you see a correlation now with what's going on and what you started with, or is it how different is it now, basically?
If you have a large enough point of reference and you could take a step back and look at the entire flow of this river of strength for 50 years, it finally dawns on me that the old guys, they knew what to do, but they didn't know why they were doing it, but it worked.
Yep.
They had a great love. They had a great reverence for it. I happened to be around people at the end of that golden era that I was young and I was full of energy and I was hungry. And there were a few people, a lot of them just told me I was a tall, skinny kid and I was crazy because I should be out playing basketball instead of lifting weights. But it was something I loved, and despite no matter what they said, even some really good ones, by and large, there were a few people out there that in an unselfish way encouraged me by just acts of kindness or me taking the initiative and having the trust of my parents to go at 13 years old on a train into York and rent my own hotel room and find my way to the Nationals or find my way to the York gym on a Saturday morning. That's not a typical thing. But what I noticed, weight training and resistance training and the body hasn't really changed that much. And people are always looking for an easier way to cop out or a way to get around an issue of getting stronger without working. But what it is, it's truly understanding what you're doing, working hard, but working smart. And now what I find, we deal a lot with athletics, and it's a time factor. The old day of the gyms, we used to go, and we would spend the day. We would walk 5 miles from my house to the Elizabeth YMCA, and we would work out all afternoon, either with Anthony or Desi, or there were, at that time Dave Draper was in town. Yep, he trained at our gym. And after that, we'd walk another 5 miles home and eat a piece of pizza. That was a big treat. And that is kind of how we lived. If we went to the York picnic and everyone chipped in for gas, and we would go there, and it would be the day after the Nationals and powerlifting, and you would see these great guys you've read about in Strength and Health magazine live and get to shake their hands and take a picture with them or see. By just chance, I walked in one day into the York when they first opened the York Museum, and the Mighty Atom was there.
Oh, wow.
Just out of the clear blue. And the way they were treating him, I wasn't sure who he was, but they were treating him like a very important person. So I lingered a bit, and I watched him actually bite a nail in half and hand John Grimmick. And Tony Terlazzo, who was a great weightlifter and manager at York, was taking pictures. And I said, I'm just the only person other than them seeing this great feat of strength. And it's those special moments to see some of the greatest lifts of all time just to happen to be there. It's been so inspiring. And to be able to share that with other people And the science is here now. Everyone knows when you read research quarterly that down to the last nanogram, why something happens. But the old guys knew it. They just know how to explain it. They went at it in a simple, straightforward way.
More instinctual.
Yeah.
But you know, I got to ask you about a couple of the guys. I mean, this is like for a guy like me. This is like. Wow, I just struck pay dirt right now. Tell me, I've always been a huge fan of Anthony DiTillo from, when they're writing articles, I was pretty small, but I've bought a lot of back issues, anything I could find from Bill Hinburn or anybody, the old Iron Man with Perry Rader, and I love reading anything DiTillo wrote. I've got a couple of his books you know, that he started in reprint. And he was huge. Pictures are pictures. Was he the monster? Like, I mean, that guy had a set of traps and stuff on him. Like, I thought they were ungodly. Can you tell me a little bit about Anthony DiTillo, Richard?
Sure. The real boss at the Elizabeth YMCA was a gentleman. His name is Dezo Banlaki. He was a Hungarian Olympic lifter. And he was tough, but he really knew his stuff, and he was extremely strong. And everyone looked up to him. Anthony DiTillo included. So Anthony was, I would guess, about 250 pounds when I met him. Very friendly guy, very articulate, very good heart to him. And he looked up the world to Desi, who was my coach, because I was just starting to get really into Olympic weightlifting and powerlifting, and I was quite good. I wound up with an athletic scholarship throwing the discus, but I never had the causative relationship that got it getting stronger allowed me to throw better. I never got that. I love to do both, but I kept them independent. But getting back to Anthony, Anthony lived by meager means, but he had a mind that was solid gold. When I first went down there, there was a wooden power rack made out of 4x4s. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty crafty, so I decided that with their blessings, I would widen it out, and which they really liked. And we put a urethane sleeve in the rack where you could actually do a light rebound type training.
Oh, wow. Yes. Wow.
Well, Anthony grew quite quickly. I used to call him Tony Baroni. That was his nickname down there. Yep. And we were all very close and looked forward to seeing each other and working out together. He stayed mostly in the power rack. He was not big on full squats. He was not big on the Olympic lifts. But, by gosh, seated incline presses, seated presses, partial squats. Mm-hmm. He honed it to a fine art. And he also knew how to explain it through his writing. With passion, inspire mm-hmm. others.
Mm-hmm. That is awesome because I think you meant there's one other guy. Well, there's a number of people, but I want to get into more of you, obviously. A guy I've read about him a lot, and he was just slabs of muscle, was Mel Hennessy. Did you ever meet Mel?
I saw Mel one time. I've seen most of the great ones over the years at a lot of the nationals. The events back in the day you couldn't conceive of, Larry Pacifico would put on in Dayton, Ohio. He would put the nationals on, and there would be literally 8,000 people watching the finals.
Wow.
I remember the greatest lifts I've ever seen. I saw Lee Moran when he squatted that famous 1,004.
Yep.
He almost dropped the weights on me when the bar fell off his shoulders the first time.
Yeah.
But to see it as an event, as something you planned all year to go to, was a great thing. Hennessy was a very, like Ronnie Ray, he was a very short, compact man. Gosh knows if he had known that back in that day it was a 3-second pause, it was raw, he was built like a fire plug. Mm-hmm. I watched him lift a time or two, but I didn't personally know him.
Okay.
People like you name them, I follow him pretty close. I was close friends with John Gamble in his day.
Yep.
I saw Doyle Kennedy do some great lifts. The Kaz in his prime a number of times, and we're still close friends.
What about I didn't mean to interrupt you, cut you off, but what about obviously you saw Grimmick. What was it about Grimmick? I mean, anybody that comes on this show that has got the background somewhat, I mean, not nearly as deep as yours, but are very aware and have been in the sport, John Grimmick's name comes up all the time. Occasionally, too, you'll hear a lot about Bill March, you know, and we used to talk about the Peanuts West gang and all that. What was it about John Grimmick that was so unique about him?
Well, It was strange, very strange. There was a gentleman, we had a cellar gym, the Cedar Street Boys, that I had built a gym in a large basement that up to 20 people would train at a time. That's where we,
wow,
by and large, most of our lifting there in the YMCA. And there was a gentleman down the street that would kept coming up, and he would keep bringing albums with him. And we were young teenagers. We didn't know one way or another. And in it, of all things, two doors down at 16 years old, John Grimmick lived there.
Wow.
And he showed us the first pictures, physique pictures of Grimmick at 16. And Grimmick was in tremendous shape as far as maturity and muscle thickness even back then. He came about at a time when he competed in Olympic lifting. He was extremely muscular. People liked his lifting, and they had a connection with what his body form was like. Strength and Health magazine was coming up into its own, so he probably had more cover shots than anyone. So that helped a lot. Grimmick was he was not a real loud guy. He was quiet. Always wore dark glasses. He had kind of a eye thing going on. So I was either sensitive to light, but he was always in tremendous shape. He lived it. He looked like he was strong because he was.
Yeah.
He wasn't. They were real. You could identify with them.
Yep. And the thing was, it was. I don't know. I wasn't in that era, but everything I read, it seems like you guys were more of a fraternity than I think it is now. Now you got obviously little sectors of different styles of lifters, but from what I gather back in your day, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, especially the way you're conveying this to me, it seems like you guys, even though maybe you did different things, but you're all envious of one another, and you seem to be more of a pack, like, is, would that be right to say that?
Right, I refer even now to the people I train with as a pack, because
yep.
a wolf alone could pull down a deer, but a pack
yep.
of wolves could pull anything down.
Exactly.
But you have to be unified in your effort. You have to be unified in your position in the pack. I showed people respect because they earned it. I was
right.
not jealous of it. They were there, they paid their dues, and they were taking their time to show me what it took them years being kicked around to learn. So there
Absolutely.
Was a lot of respect. There was a certain camaraderie. It wasn't a me thing.
Yeah.
It was a bunch of guys getting together. And still to this day, no matter what you're wearing, they don't take a half an hour to change. 10 minutes to work out. I walk in what I'm wearing during the day, put a lifting belt on, suck it up, and get going.
See, that, and you know something, Richard? That's the message the kids need to hear now more than anything. It's like Bert and I were talking about this on the last show. It was like so tired of you know, everybody's got to get a trophy. Everybody needs a pat on the back. Life doesn't work that way, all right? It's nice when you're with people you want to work with, you push them. If you can open a door for them and then they take it from there, that's the way it's got to go. This nonsense now that everything should be handed to you or everyone's got to have the same thing on the playing field is ridiculous. You set yourself up for failure that way.
It's not – today if people feel entitled, and I honestly, in a humble way, I'm grateful for everything that's ever happened to me. And I've had to work for everything I have. I started with nothing, built a business, and now my business is worldwide and takes care of probably 100 people. And it is something, an extension. It's not about the money. It's about the love of what I saw as a quality in life, of being a strong person inside and a strong person outside. Yeah, I have a good grip, but I'm strong in other places. I made a point in my life to continue my strength, not just to have a high point and burn out like a shooting
yeah.
star.
Yep.
My goal was reached this year. I've for the last 49 years, I've been able on my birthday to pull at least 500 pounds in the deadlift.
Unreal.
And that's through thick and thin, school, athletics, marriages, divorces, childbirth, yep. travels, but always trying to keep a level of strength and enthusiasm where I could say, I've been there, I've done that. And to me, the longevity of the love of what I've done, it has been my dream. It's not outlifting some guy. That doesn't matter because there's always someone stronger.
Yep.
It's getting out there and doing it, like doing deadlifts last night. I could have just ate them up. They were going as smooth as they went 25 years ago because I still have it in my heart that I value that.
And you know something, you have a discipline that, you know, I wish we could somehow put that in pill form and give it to everybody, because discipline and commitment and obviously your love for what you do. And, you know, the nice thing, you know, you hit it right on the head. It's not so much about making the money, because when you behave like that, you are going to make money, because people are going to come to you because you have something that someone else doesn't offer. But, you know, the big thing is, you know, you're going to be doing this until the day you're planted, just like the way I think too. I know Bert and I have talked about that. There's something in us. I always say it's in our DNA to a point, because it's like, you know, you as a young man, look at, you know, how many parents would even let you travel like that? I mean, your parents had to believe in you big time. Even maybe you weren't even sure at that point, okay, where am I going with this? I love it, and I'm just going to keep following my dream. The thing is like this, it's something with lifters. You know, I love to hear people, they'll give you some BS criticizing, oh, they're not smart, all they do is... I've met some of the smartest people, not only interviewing, who are in this industry, but they're some of the most generous and nice people that I've ever met in my life.
If I had to look back at it, it wasn't an attitude of, with my strength, who could I beat, or how many trophies I could get, because in the big picture, you'll find out that that's not the most important thing. What I knew in my heart, that I had the passion to lift and the desire when I have to do it, that I knew that no one else was willing to go where I would go,
right,
to beat me, and they knew it, and and I would try my very best. I would always hope that would be better than their very best, not to beat them, but just for the sake of the love of it and the trying. The people, I was a teacher for a number of years, and the ones that I specialized in were not the ones that could do 10 pull-ups, because what kind of teacher is that? They are already, they're good. But to get the kids that wouldn't want to take PE or had a handicap or taking some of my people in our plant at work and for the first time see them lift and struggle with 65 pounds, honest to God, in the bench press, and weigh 170 pounds. Now they weigh 225 and bench 305 7 months later.
Yeah. Well, that is testament. Yeah, well, it's testament to your leadership, too. And, you know, I've found with a lot of people, and you probably have, too, sometimes the most gifted aren't going to be the best out on the field. You know, sometimes it's the guy that, well, I'm not really sure which way we're going to go with him, but suddenly he or she will grow mentally and physically, and suddenly they're like the captain out on the field then. And I'd much rather have individuals like that that have decent talent than to have somebody that's so rich in talent they don't even understand what they have and they can't do squat when it comes to when things get very hard out there.
As you said, it's you could be entitled or feel entitled with a great body. If you don't have such a great body and you have to work hard as heck and do things that will make you more creative in training. I mean, I had nothing when I grew up other than time. I was an only child, and my parents worked a lot. So if it wasn't for me building things, inventing things, lifting weights, I would probably been just a failure. But my creativity, my mechanical abilities, and my lifting abilities have come from that situation. I wasn't given anything. I had to work for it, and I appreciate it so much more. I was weak. I could not finish the presidential walk-run test of 600 yards. And I graduated high school, no one could touch me. Now, what was the difference? It was the dedication to doing something that was positive in my life, training and track and field and wrestling, and those things have sustained me for the last 40 years.
Yeah. Well, here's the last question about a personality, and then I want to go right into how you started the equipment business. I'm going to be very interested in what was the first piece, and then I want to get into some grip stuff with you. But I got to ask you this. Paul Anderson, did you ever meet him?
Absolutely, a number of times.
Oh, good.
He was...
Go
ahead.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
He was probably my first hero. My mother, I was too embarrassed or too young to write, and my mother would write him letters, and he would actually send pictures back and autograph them and send little letters. The same thing with Bob Bednarski, which I can consider one of the greatest American lifters ever. They took the time for some nobody kid to help him out, and that's what I feel that I have to give back as a thank you. Anderson was the most spectacular person I've ever been around as far as in spirit and in strength. I was asked to, he gave an exhibition at a nearby high school, and they were pressed because he asked for a certain size bar and a certain amount of weights. And back then, no one really had weights in Columbia.
Exactly.
So I made up the bar. It was 4 feet long. I remember with the collars, it weighed 7 pounds. I got on my bathroom scale. I weighed up the weights that weighed 250 pounds. And he walked in, no warm-up. Didn't see the bar until that moment, reached over, picked it, two-armed it up to his shoulder, and while he was speaking, telling his testimony to God, pressed it two reps and almost a third. Mm-hmm. And I knew then I was seeing one of the strongest men that ever walked the planet. He's debated over the years for what he did or didn't do. I don't think that was his top priority. Records or beat anybody. It was to use his strength to be able to inspire lesser people of physical strength and inspire people to help him help the weak. And I can't ever fault him for that.
Well, the pictures I've seen of him, you know, it's just amazing, you know, watching him putting all whatever he's going to put on overhead. You know, of course, he's always known for his squatting, and he was a great puller. It's just, he was such an amazing man. I mean, I've got, you know, I get stuff from his home still. I donate to that on occasion, and I've got a couple, you know, I've got some of his books, obviously, and they released they put some of his excerpts on CD. Just, you know, it's nothing polished. It's old. It's probably in the 50s, 40s. I mean, I don't care how the quality is. It's just great to hear someone of that caliber because, you know, like you're saying, that's a big thing for a kid. Bednarski, Paul Anderson, I'm sure a lot of those guys did. Probably Bill March.
Yeah.
You know, there's a kid that they don't know you from a rock in the road, and they still thought enough of you to give you something. And I don't think you see a lot of that anymore. You know, it's, you know, everybody wants to get paid. You know what I mean? You know, like you said, do you know, my mother used to always say to me, my mother's a nurse. And my mother would say to me, you know, if you see somebody today, say hello to them or give them a smile, because that might be the only person that even says a word to them or even offers them that. And when you think about that, that could be the change in somebody's life that you don't even know you're doing, you know?
I've run into every year, everyone that was, I taught elementary PE and history, and every kid in the school, no matter from kindergarten on up, knew how to lift weights. It was comical almost, but they all loved it because I tried to show them strength in a good light.
Yes.
As a result, when they grew up and went to high school, they won the state championship because they're all as strong as bulls by then. I still receive letters from people 30 years ago. There's a local doctor that's building a medical complex that his one trophy on the wall was the weightlifting award I gave him in fifth grade.
Unbelievable.
He values that, and he said that gave me more guidance of how to go after life and do things right. He's a successful physician, owning his own medical park center, but he has that humble background to remember that if you really want it enough, you can do it. And training and lifting is not it's not an ends, it's a means to get better, stronger physically, stronger in your mind, to do good with that. If you have your strength, use it for good. Don't just sit there and just gloat that, oh, I have the strongest, do something with it.
No, you're right, but then when you have influences like you and others out there, that changes the world, in my opinion. But let's get on to something that is very interesting to me here. Obviously, you were you still are a very smart individual. You know how to design. You have obviously a mind that worked a lot different than other people conceptually with things. What got you in? Did this happen by accident, Richard? Just out of necessity? Because like when you're talking about when you were training with DeTillo and Desi there. What got you making equipment? I mean, was it because you just wanted to mess with it? You needed something to be safe? How did this happen by accident, or did you have a definite purpose right then and there as a young man?
I had a fairly not lonely childhood, but I was alone a lot, so I had to be creative to keep myself busy. My favorite things were Erector Set, Lincoln Logs, things of that nature that you could create things into, not just play with them. I wanted to lift, but I didn't have any money. I would save up my allowance to, and at 10 cents a pound, I would go to Burr Barbell with my dad. He was very supportive of me, and I'd buy 100 pounds of weights, and the basement was so low that all I could do was deadlifts. I never could lift overhead for years.
Right.
So I deadlifted 400 pounds at 12 years old.
Wow.
But I was relentless, and I always wanted to see something for what it could be, not for what it was. So if I spotted a bench that I liked, I would instantly try in my own crude way to improve on it, which I did. I remember making my first bench press. I was sixth grade. I made the top as a shop project. It was solid wood, but it was beautifully finished. I sawed all the angle iron using the fence as a guide with a hand hacksaw. I didn't know how to weld, so I bolted it together and used turnbuckles to keep it rigid. I was doing fat bar stuff when I was in the 50s. Because I just thought it was a better way to train. I liked combining things, even to this day in exercises. I don't do a lot of single purpose things. I do a lot of complex movements. I do a lot of training like in a wave, that one exercise prepares you for another, but still gives you plenty of resistance at that particular point to build up. So if anything, I was creative. When they let me go at the YMCA and modify some of the equipment, they still had benches that did not adjust. So you had a 6'4 guy lifting on the same bench that a 5'8 guy would. So I talked to the people at the Elizabeth YMCA to allowing me on my own time when I was in high school to modify some of the equipment. They literally came in and hauled me out. I'm lucky they didn't kill me. It made it better, but because of change, which most people are afraid of, they went nuts. When a power rack is supposed to be narrow, they're sure not narrow anymore. A Olympic bench is supposed to have, not supposed to have, but used to have narrow standards.
Yeah.
Now I widened them out, and I made them adjustable. Boy, did they get mad about that.
Sure.
Making a platform area instead of lifting on rough boards where you could actually do snatches and maintain balance. Little things, but I always had that gift. I could look at things and change them, and it's such an easy, because I live doing that, and I enjoy it, and being creative and mechanical all in one thing is not a common blend. And for me, it's just been easy. I could go out, if you gave me half an hour and gave me a theme to go by, I could come up with a new piece of equipment possibly in a half an hour just by something that doesn't exist, but something that you think you need that's important, and you give me the basics of it. I could turn it into iron, steel, and upholstery, and foam, and paint.
That is a gift.
I've always had that gift.
That's a visionary and a gift. All right. So we know that you're pissing people off. You build equipment and they want to run you out of Dodge, so to speak. Before you started your company or you went into the company, what do you remember the first piece of equipment you made for yourself as far as marketing goes?
Marketing, a friend that came in yesterday related to me that I decided I could not find weight equipment the way I wanted it. So I went out and bought a welder, and there was a gentleman down the street from me that was a welder for a construction company, and he kind of guided me on what tools to buy if I could afford any. And I set up an outdoor welding shop on my carport, and I would lay out there. I worked enough to probably lose my marriage over. All I did was work when I was young. And I would get out there, and I taught myself to weld. And he told me, he said, I saw you out there, those sparks burning you and laying up under welding your first weightlifting bench for sale. And this fellow has been a friend for, gosh, over 40 years. And he said, I saw the passion now. He says, a funny thing, in my garage, I built a power rack hand drilling the holes, not a machine drill, but hand drilling, that to this day, Donnie Thompson, that is his power rack that he lifts on in his gym. Mm. You're talking something that I built 35 years ago that the strongest man on the planet uses, and that's his preferred rack. It just blows me away. I had the gift then, and I pushed it. If I didn't have a level, I'd go out and fill an aspirin bottle with water, and that's what I would use. Or I would anything it took, I was willing to do in the day to go after my dream.
That my head's spinning right now. That's unbelievable. Wow. That's a story, let me tell you. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to enjoy this podcast, I can tell you right now. I guess here's the next question, Richard. Obviously, you'd start building equipment. When did you finally decide? Obviously, you're selling it, but how long did it take you to develop where you're becoming known now? Obviously, you know, Olympic lifting, power lifting, your name was out there. When did people start getting, okay, Richard Soren now builds brutal, heavy, he can design anything type of equipment. When did that finally transpire? And then how did that, like, leap into Sorenex? How did that all transpire then?
In the late 70s, I started a playground business because I wanted to involve the kids to build their own equipment. And it gained some notoriety in the state teaching manual that here is the teacher making a lesson out of building playground equipment so the kids could learn not only how to play better, but build their own stuff and respect it more. Well, I used to take in, it sounds funny, I would put up a list of things that I thought I could do or fix, and I would put them in all the bathroom stalls because all I worked with was women. There was 44 women and me, and I would fix a washing machine. If it was on the list, they'd call me, I'd fix it, and I'd read a book first how to do it. And then I fixed the wash machine, so I was in the wash machine business, and I did all kinds of things. And the playground business really took off, and I would literally go to school, work, change my clothes, and go to work until dark every day, and it was about to kill me. But my real love, no matter what athletics I was involved in, be it track and field or whatever, it always went back to lifting was my favorite thing. So I, the teaching myself to weld, and I did a few jobs, and people said, it's heavy, it's ugly, and it'll last forever. That's how it was described, and truly it was. And I built things that would hold bridges up, but it was in my mind what I thought the equipment should be. And it kind of caught on, and really it went to the point where I did actually a few small university jobs. And the big one came in 87 when I had the opportunity to do the University of Kentucky, which 25 years later they still had that same equipment and have bought a new room from us. So my second generation goes on still again. But I had to sacrifice and sell everything I have to start my business. I believed in it that much. I valued my employees that would stand by me, not only just for the money, they'd stand by me to the very end because they trusted me and they believed in me. And there was nothing I wouldn't do that I asked them to do. So it was a special time. I got to put in ideas. People trusted me enough that I remember going to one university, and after speaking with the entire administrative staff, one looked at another, and guy reached his hand out and shook his hand. He goes, "You got the job." I said, "Well, don't we need to?" He goes, "Nope." He goes, "You got my hand on it." This is a whole university believing in your skills and your vision that they were going to entrust their athletic strength program to you and your design. Mm-hmm. And I knew I couldn't get enough of that. I loved it. And from then on, I did bigger rooms at University of Tennessee. They went on an 18th Street winning spree. University of Miami, the same thing. They would not have anybody else's equipment because that was their lucky charm.
Yep.
The things I built, they won on, and they loved it. And all the pros would come back and lift on that equipment. And that, to me, is being part. Maybe I can't play football. Maybe I'm not gifted to run a 4.44, but I have helped people do that. Mm-hmm. And that's a lasting monument to my dedication to purpose to other people to benefit from. And it's made me very proud. As I said, it's not about the money. We sell all over the world. We can walk. My son does a wonderful job, and he is so respected and so bright. He can walk in welcomed at any NFL training camp. And they're lucky to have him there because he has spoken with enough coaches, so collectively he knows what everyone does.
Absolutely.
How to put it in simple terms. So I've been blessed in so many ways that if you ever talk about the American dream, I've been given
you're living
the opportunity
it.
To at least taste it.
Well, I think you're living it too because you've been in it a long time and the success and the vision. I mean, how many people get to do something they really like? I mean, we know that there's an awful lot. I believe I read statistics one day. I think it was like 97% of the people working in the United States hate their job. You know, why do you see heart attacks prevalent first thing Monday morning? They're all dreading to go to work. What you do and what I'm starting to do now, I'll tell you, Richard, I've never been happier in my life. I mean, myself, like a lot of people, lose good jobs. They're not there. You know, you hopefully build enough nest egg. That's what I've been living on for the last 2 years. Now in the last 3 months, you're starting to see the squeaky wheel get the grease. But if it wasn't for lifting and obviously good parents, I don't know what would have happened with me. I don't know how everything would have went down. But I credit most of my success to weightlifting, and I'll tell you why, and I'm sure you can share this with me, and you've talked about it plenty. If it wasn't for, like, always going after goals, always, you know, you get defeated a lot in that sense, but you always come back swinging again. And if it wasn't for building a base over a few decades here and being around some very good people, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. And all this was a vision I've had for years, and finally, you know, under circumstances that I would never wish on anybody, I had to go after something because I didn't feel there was any going back to what I was doing, even though it paid a substantial amount of money, and I didn't want to do it anymore. And here we are today talking.
Well, as you say, your dream becomes a reality if you work at it hard enough. I think you said one very true thing, that weightlifting changed and enhanced and saved your life, but it's not actually weightlifting. It's what happens in relation to that activity of weightlifting, and the people you meet and the friendships that occur and the connections that you make and people believing in you, and you're getting to see something I treasure. I could close my eyes and think I've seen some of the greatest lifts in the last half of a century with my own eyes. I was there when that happened, and no one could tell me what it was like because I was there.
I know.
But I feel obligated that if you share with somebody and inspire them, that maybe a little bit of that essence of what I saw that day could be passed on to others. And it could be anything. It could be stamp collecting. It could be hunting. Yeah. It could be fishing. But if it's put in a good context and you run into some good people with, all I say is life is all about respect and memories. That's all I want to be buried with. All the rest of it, someone else will enjoy.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you one thing. You got to be very proud because, number one, you've obviously made an effect on Bert like no other. And number two, you get to work with your son, who hopefully eventually will carry on the business when you're ready, if you're ever ready to get out of it. And I don't think you ever would anyways. But what a great opportunity you've had with Bert, and obviously to be working side by side in the trenches. Not, you know, it's nice, you know, my father passed away. I miss my father big time every day. I wish that my dad was here right now to enjoy this with me, because you know, you love your mother and everything, but it's a different thing. It's, you know, you have your ups and downs. My father and I, you know, it's like territory, you know, as you're younger growing up, you're like the young lion and, you know, the older one standing there in front of you. But now, as you're a little older and you appreciate the things your dad told you, I'm just sorry that, you know, I don't have him in a physical sense here to share this, because we've had a lot of success and now it's starting to turn, you know, we're launching the businesses and all that. And I got to tell you, it's the greatest feeling on earth, Richard.
Well, I know what you're talking about. My upbringing was a blend of a father that was truly a hard-working, fine man with a gentle heart, and showed me things in a very quiet way and supported me whether he understood or not why I loved lifting, but he supported me 100%. My mother, on the other half, was the other half of me. She was absolutely a firebrand workaholic that she had a look on her face that she would make people shudder. She was so intense. I never forget that, and that drive that I will do this no matter what, if you blend those two things together, I got kind of lucky on that. I didn't get to spend a lot of time with either of my parents ever, but I was observant enough to take those good things. And one thing they always told me, which I don't know if it was the right thing, but they always said, Richie will figure it out.
Yep.
And I don't know. I wish I had more help, but they I felt they believed me in me enough that I was smart enough to find my way, and I did. I left home early and sought my future, whatever that was, and I'm truly grateful to them and really truly grateful to all the people that it helped mold my life and take the time to inspire me.
Well, not only that, you know, they build maybe you didn't know it at the time either. You can tell. Look at the confidence they built in you. Maybe you were a little shaky, not knowing, what am I doing here? But you know something? You, for some reason, you had the innate ability to get it done. Maybe you don't know how you did it, why I did it, but okay, well, we need to widen the bench. Well, why? Well, this is what – I don't know why maybe, but – this is what we're going to do, and we're going to try it. So, see, you know, your parents, you know, they all parents, I believe, do the best they can, and they gave you stuff that a lot of people aren't that lucky to get. That's all, you know. That's a great story, let me tell you. Let me ask you a couple. I know that we're running short on time, and we're getting near the hour, but sure. There's a couple things I want to ask you, and I do hope you'll come on again because I've got a million things I could ask you. Do you have any of your original equipment yourself, Lana? You know, you still got a few of those prototypes or the real deal?
I have. I've been lucky enough to keep some things that have been given to me in my life that meant things to me ever since childhood. I don't know how I see the permanence in stone. And my uncle used to always take what he called his bride to Montauk up in New York. And they had very beautiful washed-up stones that were polished by the roughness of the sea there. And since 1956, I kept these two stones with me everywhere I've been, to school, to all around the world. And I never lost them. And every time I look at them, I think about the permanence of stone, the strength of it. That, yes, you could eventually break it, it'll wear out, but it's there for the long haul. I have a part of our gym facility that I've turned into an interactive museum, and it traces and shows in a way that it's hands-on, that people could come in and know that kettlebells are nothing new. They were there in the 1800s. There were systems of barbells that evolved into an Olympic way, rotating Olympic sets, but having a reverence for that. Or the coolest thing to me is an anvil. An anvil is the first tool that would go into a town when our expansion of our country occurred. And that blacksmith was the strongest guy in the town, and he would stand there and sweat over that anvil and watch America being built. Lord knows what that anvil saw in its history. I have collections of dumbbells that were, for example, one set that Andy Jackson, who I used to go visit as a child, made, and they're very collectible. People say, you actually lift those? I said, yeah, I lift them all the time, because I know the DNA of Franco Colombo, of Arnold Schwarzenegger, of Peanuts West, because the Zuber Gym, I would love to speak to you someday about the Zuber Gym.
We will. Go ahead. Keep going.
Black Iron Gym ever. And that their actual sweat and DNA is still in that iron. And when I lift it, I feel connected to not only today, but the past and how weightlifting has progressed. I have a great reverence for that history of it, because it's almost a pedigree letting you know where you came from.
Well, that speaking of that DNA, I've said the same thing when we went to Iceland to lift the Húsafell stone. And I said, do you know how many people have come before me and touched that stone? I mean, that was there in the 1800s when Snorri Bjornsson used it to block the way, so when he was milking the goats there, he had so they couldn't get out of the other side of the pen. It's like that is an incredible thing, because you're right. The DNA doesn't leave there. You know, I always say, you know, I think Steve Jack may have said it, you know, when you grab a stone, it's like grabbing onto eternity. And there's an awful lot to that because eternity is forever. But who knows who touched that rock before I laid my hands on it or any dumbbell or barbell in the world. You know, that's where you find the committed, physical culture, folks. I still love that word, and I still think that that's volumes when you talk about it. But when you talk the way you did about the dumbbells and the equipment, and I said about the stones, it's like, it's amazing. I've never talked to you ever before in my life, and we both think the same way like that. That's unreal. Richard, I want to ask you two things. I want to get into the grip, but I know we got time constraints and that. But I got to ask you one more name, because when we get you on next time, we'll get into some a lot of other things, because I want to really talk to you about Zuber's gym too.
All right.
Did you ever meet up, or I know he was probably way, way late in his career. A big hero of mine is J.C. Heiss. Did you ever know anyone or ever have any introduction with anything with him?
I never met him directly. I saw I competed and saw his son compete. I think it was Bob Heiss Jr. And real strong fella, cleaned around 400 pounds. I never met him directly. I think Heiss came up with a lot of the early innovations with bumper plates and bars,
yep.
of which I collected the last few that he ever made and them. And they were made out of cobalt steel, mm-hmm. and they actually have a life to them. They almost help you lift them. and it's things like that, those people, you know, how I'm thinking here, we're separated by 3-4 generations or decades, and we still have reverence or know of those people that made a difference.
Yeah.
And you know, one day I hope they're talking about you or myself and saying, gee, those guys halfway had a clue what was going on, and they loved it, and they saved enough for me where I could love it too.
I agree, because, you know, something, the best thing is leave something to somebody. And, you know, just by doing these podcasts and stuff, regardless if you and I are no longer on the earth, and hopefully whatever happens with this company 25 years from now, hopefully it'll be in somebody's good hands in my family or whatever. This stuff is going to always be there. And, you know, I don't care, like you said, well, kettlebells aren't new. That's correct. They're not. But everybody now is trying to sell these new concepts. And I had some guys on one night here, and I said, look, I don't want to, you know, I like all the endurance stuff and all this, and there's validity to everything with lifting. But you know what I want to do? Let's talk about overhead pressing. Let's talk about the old style floor press, okay? Let's talk about a deadlift. Let's talk about a squat. I said, I don't want to hear all the other stuff that's going on and how you can do this and that and the other thing. And I realize everybody's got their way to do things, but what I don't see anymore is you don't see a lot of talk about that stuff. You know, these are big movements that build everything. Look, I couldn't be a stone lifter and even think about going over to Iceland and lift a 418-pound stone and walk it for 50 meters without being a squatter, without being a presser, without being a deadlifter, all right? So why is it we've got away from all this stuff? Is it just the romance isn't there, or are we just looking to make money, say, with a CrossFit setup or whatever we want to do?
Well, think about it maybe as a closing thought. Yep. I don't go out a lot. On a social basis, I stay so busy that my social life is everything I do all day, every day. But I go out occasionally to dinner, and what you see is two people going out for a special event, and they sit with their face buried in a phone the entire meal. There's no interaction. There is no actual meeting of minds and souls. There is... I could find out any piece of information I want to know on the internet without now having to get in a car and drive 213 miles to York, Pennsylvania, or to sit on a train filled with scary people that I didn't know and didn't know if I'd ever come back.
Right.
I wanted it that bad. And, you know, if you get something easy, you never could value it. And if it takes work, and as you say, you get shut down a bunch, they know I'm going to come back no matter what. And and as long as they believe it and I believe it, I'll go on a little longer and maybe leave some things that will inspire others. But don't make it better, but don't make it easy or make it cheap. Show respect for these people that have been around and embrace the basic things. Take care of yourself. I mean, I've just recently got into stretching, and Donnie Thompson, 1265 Squatter, he took the time to work with me, and I help him in some ways, coaching him in some things, and together we go down the road. But there's a sharing there. It's not, he doesn't have his hand out, pay me, or, you know, just because you can't squat half what I do, get out of my gym. He's given back. The people that have taken their time in their life, I owe that back.
And that's why, obviously, you are the success you are, and this is why you will continue with your success for as long as you choose to do this great stuff you do. Richard, obviously, we're at the end of the show. You know, we'll talk offline when we hang up here, but I would love to have you come back on and talk about, I mean, we didn't even get into you, how you got into grip work and stuff, and I think that's fascinating, and all the other stuff you got on your mind. So why don't we plan on that? We'll talk. But for now, why don't you give everybody, obviously, how to get in touch with you, obviously, you know, how to get to the Sorenex website, et cetera, et cetera, and anything you got coming up that's going on.
Okay. One thing that is coming up is old-time Barbell Strongman Dinner, which honors all the people that are the roots of strength. It occurs every year about this time in September or October. It's October 11th this year. And that's where I first, not first met Grimmick, but people like Grimmick and Eiferman and Marvin Eater and Slim the Hammerman and the Mighty Adam and all these people meet for one day a year to put down their prize and just be friends and a lot of camaraderie. So I'm looking forward to that. If you want to read a little bit, of course, about what we do or what we sell or some of our innovations we have, it's Sorenex, that's Sorinex.com. You could reach me anytime by email, richard@sorenex.com. I'll take the time to help somebody as long as they promise me one day they'll help somebody else.
That's awesome.
We're accessible. We are very involved with the military now because of their needs, their special needs, and also with the colleges, I would think, would be our other very strong suit because they want the best. They want the innovations. They want the safety. And that is something that comes so easy to us. A lot of people always said, you know, it's flattery is being copied. That I didn't go along with that for a long time. It used to make me very mad. Mm-hmm. There's people that live off our ideas.
Yep.
But really, I'd rather see one life saved by someone using an idea of mine, not to make a dollar, but to make weightlifting better. So I can understand that now. I guess I've grown some.
Well, you know what? People, you know, being an innovator is a hell of a gift, but you got to remember there's always going to be people that want to be a copycat too, you know, and they're in it for the buck. See, the thing is, you've been in it for the long haul. This is why you're still here. This is why people, you know, admire what you do. And like I said, I've been a big fan of yours forever, and this has been an honor and a privilege for me to have you here with us today. You don't know how much I appreciate this, believe me. Do you got everything out, Richard, that you want to say as far as the business goes?
As I said, I'm just grateful to be involved in the thing that I truly love.
Well, and I'm with you. That's ditto for sure. All right, so I'm going to say a few things, and then we'll sign off. This is Motivation and Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We're sponsored by Fiorella Barbell Company. That's www.fiorellabarbellco.com. We have a brand new site up. Next week it will be finished totally, but it's beautiful. It's www.motivationandmuscle.com. We're on Facebook, Fiorella Barbell. We're on Twitter, Fiorello Eric. You can get a hold of me at FiorellaBarbell@NICAP.RR.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. I'll tell Richard, he and I are heard all over the world because right now we are being listened to in Germany and Italy. I know for sure we're running stats right now, so we're all over the place. We've got a lot of new things. The homepage is going to change. We've got a weight loss MP4 coming out. We've got a second half of that to what to do after I've lost all the weight, which we're filming and building right now. I'm getting ready for Iceland, so I'm training now. We're tentatively going May of 2015, and I'm going to get this monkey off my back finally. And I hope to hit Scotland for the Inver and the Dinnies next fall, too. So we got a full plate, but we're really enjoying ourselves. And, Richard, before I sign off, and I'll talk to you up there, I want to thank you for coming on Motivation and Muscle.
I feel truly honored to be thought of, to be part of your show, and I wish you well, sir.
Thank you very much. Okay, for Richard Soren, this is Eric Fiorello. We want to thank you for listening to us today on Motivation and Muscle, and we will be back soon. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.